This is Jim Inkster coming today. We are slated to hear from Maria Brenson Sampson, an attorney, marriage consultant, and author of I'm the Marrying Kind, A Guide to Getting Married, Staying Married, and Being Happily Married. She has some thoughts about why 70% of black women are not married. Also, journalist Paul Conroy on the remarkable life and death of Marie Colvin. His book is Under the Wire, Marie Colvin's Final Assignment. And we're scheduled to talk with Bill Martin about a major renovation project involving McKinley High School and the baseball field. Bill Martin, a talented man. We will talk with him about this important effort. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. We're joined at the start by Maria Brenson Sampson. She's an attorney, marriage consultant, the author of I Am the Marrying Kind, A Guide to Getting Married, Staying Married, and Being Happily Married. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Jim.
Nice to talk with you, and you are an advocate of marriage. Why so?
Because marriage is the foundation of any society. It is good for the family, it is good for the community, and it's good for society as a whole.
Why do so many people fail at it?
I believe so many people fail at it because we come into marriage with false assumptions, these different ideas, fairy tale ideas, and marriage is not a fairy tale. It's a living, for lack of a better word, it's a living organism. You got to constantly be working on your marriage. It's not something like, the knight in shiny armor comes along and you live happily ever after. You can live happily ever after, but you got to work at it.
297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkstershow@WRKF.org if you'd like to reach us online. The guest is Maria Brenson Sampson, an advocate, passionately so, about the virtues of marriage. Her book is I Am the Marrying Kind, A Guide to Getting Married, Staying Married, and Being Happily Married. What about folks who get married more than once, 2, 3, 4, 5 times or more? Is that a good thing?
I think it is. We would prefer that you not, the best thing is trying to stay married and being happy when you're married, but it is preferable to not being married at all. Sometimes you have to kiss a lot of frogs to get your prince, and we make mistakes.
But at one point, how many times can you say till death do us part and have any credibility?
Well, that is the human frailty we're in. You're right. That is a good question, Jim. The model is to death do us part. But sometimes our foolishness, our ignorance, that just doesn't work. But if you want to, I believe in, if first you don't succeed, try again. That's the best thing.
Okay. How many times have you been married, Maria?
This is my husband and I, we've been married for 30 years. I met him in college. We've been married. This is it.
30 years is a long time. This is your only marriage?
Yes, this is my only marriage. I was married for a very short period of time when I was 17. And that didn't last because I was too young. So I actually really don't consider it, but I guess technically I should consider that as a marriage.
Okay. You say that 70% of African-American women are not married. Why is that?
For many reasons, but here's the main reason I think 70% of African-American women are not married. From our history, we've always fought to keep our families together as African-Americans. But the society has changed at large, Jim. Traditionally, marriage has been supported by the society. Today, marriage is not really supported by the society as much as it used to be. In addition to that, women are in the workforce. Women are making their own money. So women are starting to feel, what do I need a man for? I can do bad by myself. well, you can do good with your husband. You know, it's not about doing bad by myself. It's just like, let's do good together.
But why does a woman who wishes to stay single, why does she need a husband?
I think, you know, coming from a Christian basis, I feel a woman who wishes to stay single, why would she need a husband? Because we weren't born in this world, Jim, to be by ourselves. We should go through this world together. Well,
do you have to be married to have a companion?
Yes, you do. Yeah, you can have friends. There's a difference between having a friend and having a spouse because there are different rights and obligations with a spouse. To have a friend, I'm not talking about a friend with benefit or a companion with benefits. I'm talking about a marriage. I think you should be married if you want the benefit.
297-5633 is your number. Maria Brinson Sampson. She is the author of I Am the Marrying Kind, A Guide to Getting Married, Staying Married, and Being Happily Married. Those 30 years of your marriage, are those happy years, or about 18 of them happy? What's the percentage here?
I like that question, Jim. All of my years have been happy. I'm happy. I'm happy for my children. I'm happy to be with my husband. We've grown together. We were so young we got married. Marriage is work, just like anything else. It was work for me to go to law school, to graduate from law school. All of that is work. Anything worth having will take work. And so knowing that, not being deceived, but knowing that it takes work, I'm happy even when I hit a challenge in the marriage, which we have had many challenges in our relationship. We just grow together and grow past those challenges, and that's the way it goes.
What's been the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge, I think, for my husband and I think there were two main challenges common to many people. One is how you rear your children. You know, I've been reared by my parents. He's been reared by his parents. So we come in with two different thoughts on child rearing. Finally, coming together on how to rear the children. And second of all, finances. How we're going to merge our finances, what we're going to do, what is the best thing to do. But, Jim, we learned both of these things, how to really work out both of those challenges is through biblical principles. And whenever we are on the wrong track, we go and get our reference book and decide on what is right.
Are you saying that atheists can have a successful marriage?
I'm not saying, I don't know what atheists can have, but I know Christian can have a successful marriage. Christian can have a great marriage. That I know for sure.
You note that 70% of African-American women are not married, and you say that infidelity in black and Hispanic marriages is around 75%. Where do you get that figure?
Well, the 70% of African-American men from the New York, I don't have my...
Yeah, I know where you got that figure, but as far as the rate of infidelity, that's harder to measure.
This is based on, I apologize, I don't want to give you the wrong information. I don't have it with me at this time, my statistics. If you would like at another time,
okay.
Jim, and I've been
well,
leaving next time.
Well, this is the time we're talking with you, but you say infidelity is an issue.
Yes.
You know, some folks say infidelity is okay. You obviously think otherwise.
Absolutely. If you decide to get married, you should be true to your commitment. And your commitment to your marriage is to be monogamous, to be faithful to that person. And no, infidelity is never acceptable. It can be forgiven, but it's never acceptable.
Well, Bill and Hillary Clinton just celebrated their 38th wedding anniversary, and there's obviously been infidelity on at least one of the partners' cases in that marriage, and they're doing okay. Isn't it an individual choice?
There has been, yes, it is an individual choice, but it's still wrong. We make, individuals make wrong choices all the time. As for Hillary and Bill Clinton, I really respect Hillary. I love her, and I love Bill Clinton. They're two of my favorite politicians. But my thought on it was wrong for Bill. Just because Bill did it didn't make it right. His wife was gracious enough to forgive him. They worked it out, and they're a very good example how you can overcome infidelity once the person that committed the infidelity decides that he's going to ask forgiveness and he's going to repent, which means he's going to change his mind, he's going to stop doing it, and he's going to do the right thing by being faithful to his marriage.
Well, he may or may not have done that, and who knows what goes on in a marriage, but if they have an agreement, really, isn't that between those two people? Isn't it their business and not ours?
No, I definitely disagree with that. Character matters. Character matters, what you do in your marriage, because it affects you as an individual. It affects your family, your extended family, and eventually it affects the society. No, I don't think what you do in your marriage is exclusive to you. I think it affects everybody at some point. And no, so I disagree with that.
Okay, so you're saying if you cheat, you don't have character.
I think if you cheat, you have put a stain on your character. I'm not saying that you don't have character. I'm saying that if you had character, you made a mistake. If you admit to your mistake and stop doing that and say, hey, I made a mistake. I damaged my character. This is not who I am. This is something I did, and this is not acceptable, and I will not do it again.
297-5633 is your number for Maria Brenson Sampson. She says she is the marrying kind. That's the title of her book, I Am the Marrying Kind. And she has 30 years of marriage to show for it. How many children for you?
We have two.
Two children?
My husband and I have two children.
You say that's one of the big challenges, and usually when people get married, they do have children, but not always. Is that an essential part of being married?
No, it's not essential. It's just an added bonus. Children is a blessing from God for the marriage.
And your children are how old, Maria?
My girls are in their 20s. They would kill me if I gave you the specific number, so they say it's okay. I always say they're in their 20s.
Well, they're not that old. My goodness, if they're already complaining in their 20s, it gets worse from there. John in Livingston. John, good morning. You're on with Maria Brenson Sampson. Hi, John.
Good morning. How are you folks?
Fine.
Good. I've got a couple of comments. I found it interesting when you asked your guest there how many times she'd been married, that she answered very quickly one, and then kind of recanted on that she had actually been married twice, but considered the first marriage basically kind of null and void because of age and so forth. And I find that interesting, but I don't think we can just dismiss a marriage because we didn't think it worked. You know, there are a lot of folks that have great criticisms of annulments because we can just kind of wish a marriage away, and regardless of the age and the circumstances, I don't think we can do that. But more importantly, I agree that the statistics are probably correct as far as the number of black women that aren't married. And it seems to me like in the folks that I know in the black community, it seems like there's not that much wrong with the women. It doesn't seem to be their fault, and I might be way off base here. So I'm wondering if your guests can kind of tell us a little more about why black men have such an aversion to marriage and why they can't make that commitment.
What do you say?
I feel I can only give you my opinion since I happen to be a black woman. But as a mother and as a black woman, I feel that men in general have an aversion to marriage, but black men are scared. Black men are scared. It's also in how the mothers are rearing their boys. African-American mothers, there's a saying that says mothers love their sons and they raise their daughters. I think the main thing is the message we're giving our boys. We must make marriage as important and family as important to our males as it is to our females. And I think that is the problem why they have such an aversion, I apologize, to marriage.
Maria Brenson Sampson, attorney, marriage consultant, and author of I Am the Marrying Kind. We will return with her, 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, or Inkstershow at wrkf.org. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Here's your number, and we rejoin Maria Brinson Sampson, a lawyer, a marriage consultant, and the author of I Am the Marrying Kind. She is bullish on the state of matrimony in America, noting that many people now are choosing to remain single, and 70% of black women are not married. And you don't think this is a good thing?
No.
You know, there are people who are going to disagree with you.
Absolutely. And that's the great thing about living in America. We have the choice to agree and disagree without being disagreeable. And I'm absolutely okay with that.
How many people in marriages who haven't been divorced are unhappy in those marriages? I would say quite a few are.
I think so. I don't know the percentage at this particular point, but I think because we have misconceptions about marriage, and with that misconception comes the unhappiness. If you think you're going to have $1,000 and all you have is $50, that probably is going to make you unhappy.
Well, if half the people get divorced, and that's apparently where we are right now, and then of the half who are married, many of those are unhappy, the odds are that marriage is not going to solve your problems. It may even make them worse. So why not advocate being single?
Because I advocate being married. Marriage is not supposed to solve your problems. Marriage, when one get together, join unions for marriage, you bring your happy self in to the marriage with someone else that's happy too. Marriage is not supposed to solve your problem. It helps you so you do not walk alone in this life. You walk together. And when you have a problem, someone else can give you support in your problem, not solve the problem
for
you.
Well, you're a lawyer, you're an author, you're obviously an assertive, confident, successful individual. I would imagine that you're not an appendage of your spouse.
No, I'm not. I'm not an appendage. We're spouses.
Well, what about your husband? Is he an independent guy, or does he need your permission to leave the house?
I like the way you say that. He doesn't need my permission for anything, but what we do, we give consideration to each other. We discuss, my husband and I, we discuss any decision that we make. We just don't leave the other person out in making these decisions.
Well, do you have friends independent of one another? Do you ever associate with friends without your spouse being there, or is it a case where everywhere you go, he goes?
No. Everywhere I go, he does not go because he's not interested. Actually, we do have friends. Not necessarily. I put it like this. We do not have friends outside of each other. I have my girlfriends. He have his friends. You know, that he have his time with his boys or his work friends. When I say his work friends, these his co-workers or whatever. But, no, we're not together all the time. My husband is in the medical field, and I'm in the legal field. So many times that affects how we socialize and who we socialize with.
Well, do you have male friends, and does he have female friends, or is that forbidden in your marriage?
I think I wouldn't say forbidden. It's discouraged. And for me, I'm going to speak for Maria. As a married woman, I don't need male friends separate from my husband. I have male friends, but they're also friends of my husband. I just don't think it would be a good thing for women who are married or men who are married to have friends that's not connected to their wives or their spouses.
And why is that?
It's back to that old question, can men and women be platonic friends? It would be very difficult for men and women to be platonic friends, and it also why you should not. The reason I decide not to, and I would suggest to anyone I'm consulting with that's married, is that if you have a friend of the opposite sex, that person should be a friend of your spouse, so you won't have an opportunity for things to get misunderstood, misconstrued, something to happen that should not have happened because maybe you were feeling down that day, you and your wife had a fight, etc.
Well, here's a question from Jessica. She says, to make the decision on marriage, should you be in love or should it be just a business decision?
Marriage should never be a business decision. You should be in love when you're contemplating marriage.
What about same-sex marriage? Do you think that's a good idea?
No.
Why not? If marriage is good for heterosexuals, why shouldn't it be good for everybody else?
As a Christian, this is where I'm going to tell you I am a Christian and I believe in the Bible. And based on my Christian values, marriage is between a man and a woman for me and for my Christian beliefs.
But you just said people shouldn't go through life alone.
Absolutely. You shouldn't go alone. And so if you're a man and you don't want to be alone, you should have a wife. And if you're a woman and you don't want to be alone, and you want to be in a marriage relationship, you should have your husband.
But what if you're not attracted to somebody from the opposite sex? What are you going to do then? Are you out of luck?
Well, the Bible has made provisions for people like that. And I don't think you're out of luck. I think you're either blessed or you're cursed. But I think with God's blessing, because he loves everybody, it doesn't matter your sexual orientation. God loves everybody, and he asks us to love everyone, too. So he has made provision for that. You can go through life and not be married, especially if you are not attracted to the opposite sex. That is exactly what you should do. Stay unmarried and have your walk together with the community, with your church community, your family community, your extended community. But you should not marry someone other than the opposite sex if you're not attracted to people like that. But you should remain celibate.
Well, Maria Brinson Sampson, you've made some provocative statements, and I would imagine there are many who agree with you, and of course there are quite a few who disagree with what you're saying. But are you able to accept people who have a different point of view than you, or are you looking at them and saying they're out to lunch, that they're not doing the right thing?
No, I accept that. I respect. We put it like this. There's a difference between accepting and respect. I respect other people's opinion. I can accept their opinion. I don't necessarily say they're out of lunch. I say they are out of. We don't agree with each other because we're coming from different philosophy. I come from a Christian-based philosophy of thought, and maybe that person doesn't. I base my decision on biblical principles and biblical ideas. So if you don't, well, God gives you that choice. He's a God of choice, and that's what I tell you, too, and I respect that.
Well, we thank you for joining us today. The book is I Am the Marrying Kind, A Guide to Getting Married, Staying Married, and Being Happily Married. And Maria's had two marriages. I guess they were both happy in their own way.
Yeah, they were both happy in their own way. I was young and foolish the first time, but it was still a blessing. Oh. I have to write a book on that one day.
Okay.
But yes, the answer would be yes in their own way.
Well, it's good to talk with you, Maria. Thank you.
Thank you. It was great talking with you too, Tim.
Right. And of course, there are some people like Rush Limbaugh who had four happy marriages. And others like Larry King who've had eight happy marriages. It's one of those things. You know, if you got a good thing, just keep on doing it. We're joined in studio now by Bill Martin, who is a man about town, involved in a few different endeavors. And Bill is now involved with a major undertaking at McKinley High School. McKinley High School, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jim.
I'm doing well. Now, tell us about what's going on with the baseball facility at McKinley.
A number of people, myself, some parents, certainly the players, the principal at McKinley, Principal Brown, we are all trying to raise some necessary funds to renovate the baseball field. It hasn't been, I think, well taken care of in a long, long time, and it shows that wear. And we're trying to bring it up to a standard that is at least equal to the other teams we play.
Well, and what kind of disrepair is it right now?
Well, the batter's box, for instance, is about, I don't know, 4 inches below level. The what should be a pitcher's mound is more or less a pitcher's circle, level with the field around it. And then the infield, the base paths, are also probably a good 4 inches below level. And throughout infield and outfield, there's a lot of potholes, divots, what have you. It's not properly graded, so it doesn't drain properly throughout infield or outfield. And I could go on and on and on, but that those are sort of the major points.
So there's no 60 feet 6 inches between home plate and the pitcher's mound. At least the mound is a lot lower at McKinley High.
Just a wee bit. Yeah, it's supposed to be 10 inches above home plate, and it might be, but only because home plate is so much lower than it should be.
Well, Bill Martin is a man who speaks from experience. You know the terrain well. You're the assistant coach. How did that gig come about?
Well, my son Max started there as a freshman a few years ago. He's a junior this year. And he and I and my wife, in going to see games, were just kind of, disconcerted, let's call it, by not only the shape that the field was in, but the equipment that they had. They seemed to be well behind the curve in terms of other teams in their division. And Coach Fowler, the head coach, was just kind of a one-man show at the moment, really keeping the program going. And I stepped in to help as an assistant coach, and also with, as I say, Principal Brown's help and blessing, took on the effort to try to raise some funds and get the field back in shape.
How long have you been there?
My son is a junior, so 3 years. Our third year there, yeah.
And it is a historic school, as we know, and a great athletic tradition.
Yeah, they do have a terrific athletic tradition on the historic function. They're the oldest high school in Louisiana, founded for African-Americans, and their first graduating class of African-Americans was just 4 students, and that was back in 1916. So it's, like you say, it's a great historical institution.
So we're 3 years away from the 100th anniversary.
Yeah, we're coming right up on it. Sure.
Okay. Now, what is the percentage of African-Americans in McKinley?
Oh, boy, I'd be hard-pressed to tell you. I want to say it's probably still around the 80% mark,
give or take. On the baseball team?
The baseball team, over the last couple of years, has been a high percentage of African Americans, and then we've got a few Hispanics and Caucasians as well. So
there's it's a diverse group, which is what we are striving for, at least theoretically.
Yeah, diverse not only racially, but we've got kids in the school itself has traditional and gifted students, and I was real happy to see that the baseball team reflects that as well. We've got a good balance of traditional and gifted students on the baseball team.
297-5633, Inkster's show at WRKF.org. Bill Martin, McKinley High School assistant baseball coach, and he is leading an effort along with parents and others in the community to have the baseball facility renovated. How much money would it take to complete the project?
Well, the amount we would need to do it today, just to have it all done, would be $90,000. That would bring the inside the fence part of the field, that would bring that up to par, also provide the necessary equipment to maintain that field then. And then it would also provide baseball equipment for both a junior varsity and a varsity squad.
Robert Scott writes, the pitcher's mound is like a crater. Why is it that a high school baseball field in this area of town is in such worse shape than baseball fields in other parts of our community? It's only a short distance from Alex Box and the U High baseball field. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. When I started this effort, and I'm still very much in the learning curve of trying to raise funds, but I initially went to the school district, and I'll be honest, I'm not sure exactly. I still am not entirely sure what their responsibility is to the athletic programs in the district. But early on, I decided it was probably prudent to try to go out in all, you know, I still talk with them and try to get help from them as well, but also want to go outside and get from the public, from the community, from corporations, would like to get support from them as well.
Well, let's compare U High to McKinley, two public high schools, a stone's throw apart. U High, state of the art, McKinley in disrepair.
Well, you know, I have not studied that difference per se, but my best guess would be they've got the huge benefit of being in the shadow of LSU, figuratively and in terms of the you know, the kids that go there.
McKinley's
their parents
in the shadow of LSU too.
It's towards the outside of
not
the
on
shadow.
The campus, but
no, true enough, and I think that that's a good point. And in fact, I've always wondered, and just recently started a little more directly trying to find out why there hasn't been a closer relationship between LSU and McKinley, given their you know, we're roughly a mile away from Tiger Stadium, and you know, depending on what you call on campus, we're virtually on campus. So I think it's a reasonable question, and it's something I'm trying to look into a bit more.
Leslie asks, if you do you teach at the school?
I do not. I'm a volunteer coach and a volunteer fundraiser, and we have another assistant coach, Coach Reed, who teaches at the school, and assistant coach Fowler teaches. It escapes me now where he teaches, but he's not on campus there at McKinley. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that makes it all a little bit more difficult as well.
Another listener notes that U High is much different than McKinley, that U High, for all intents, is a pseudo-public school. The situation is somewhat different. I take the point.
Well, yeah, yeah. And but to look beyond that, if you look at maybe a more of an apples-to-apples comparison, something like a Woodlawn, which has... They I wouldn't call them state of the art per se in terms of their ball field, but it's decidedly been much better taken care of over the years. And honestly, Jim, I think a lot of this comes down to parental involvement, like so many other aspects of public school. And you just have to get, and invariably, when you're involved with volunteer operations of any kind, you tend to have a kind of core group of parents and then get help from the rest of the parents. As they're able, as they're available.
Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on with Bill Martin.
Yes. Isn't it perfectly obvious that the reason you have better facilities at U High is because that's where the children of the privilege go, including the governor's children?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a reasonable point to make. And I guess my answer to that, you know, my kids, the ball players, will sometimes complain about not having this, that, or the other thing, and I can't say that they're not correct. But then my answer is, well, then how do we then accomplish that? We don't have the advantages a U High has. We don't have the advantages of, you know, some other schools with whom we compete. What do we then do in order to, you know, get what we need? Just in order to be on a par with them.
297-5633, 877-217-5757. Back with Coach Bill Martin after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, if you're dialing outside the area. And Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. We're with Coach Bill Martin of McKinley High School, the assistant coach. The head coach is?
Brett Fowler.
And this is the baseball team at McKinley, one of the most historic schools in the United States. And the baseball field is in disrepair. There isn't even a pitcher's mound, if you can believe that. And a few blocks away at U High, state-of-the-art facilities. And Bill Martin says about $90,000 is needed to get the U High field in shape. What are you doing?
McKinley Field.
U High is in fine shape. You're right. So thanks for the correction. The
sure.
$90,000 for McKinley is what you're seeking. So how are you going about this?
Well, I worked with a friend of mine who has done a good bit of grant writing in her time, and she helped me write some grants, and I've submitted those. I've not heard back one way or the other on anything yet on that front. I've also approached some of the corporations and some of the more local businesses. Canes, for instance, on LSU is going to be putting a banner, you know, buying a banner to put up on our outfield fence. and that'll be a big help. I need to get, or would love to have, a bunch of other businesses of that kind sponsor us in that way. Beyond that, one of the really successful fundraisers we've just started this year, we're parking on LSU home football game days. We're parking cars in our parking lot, and we've done really well with that and hope to continue to do well with the remaining few games, or a couple of games, I guess, now, home games.
So slowly but surely, you're raising the money, although it'd be nice if somebody wrote you a $90,000 check.
Yeah, that $90,000 you just requested for you high would be better if it could come to us, please, Jim.
I get the idea, so I'm glad you corrected me again.
Yeah, sure, sure.
For McKinley High, $90,000 just to get the field in good shape. And baseball, and in some views, including yours truly, the greatest sport of them all, a game that is Larry King, the aforementioned talk show host. He said it's athletic chess. It's a great game, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I played organized ball from the time I was, I think, 9 till the time I was about 21. And my son Max and I can sit in front of a ball game on TV or out at the stadium and discuss it in detail. He has a mind that has all the various nuances much better than I do. But I love the game.
Paul in Opelousas. Hi, Paul. You're on the air with Coach Bill Martin. Hi, Paul.
Doing good, doing good. Just a question. Is the field at McKinley High in disarray because of non-play, overplay, or just the investment just wasn't made? And recently I was hearing a report that the amount of African Americans playing or going into baseball is at a decline. So is baseball at McKinley High on the decline or on the increase? And how is the academic status of McKinley High? Thank you.
Well, the academic status, I think, is the final question you asked. And I can't really speak to that. As I say, I don't teach there at school, and I'm not familiar with that terribly closely. As to the decline, I guess I've read the same studies you have, and I know that in the inner city, in the black community, as you put it, or African-American community, it has been particularly on the decline. As to McKinley specifically, in the 3 years I've been there, which is all I can really speak to, we have built the interest, I'll say, within the student body a bit, and it's gotten better from 1 year to the next. We had a sign up the other day I wanted to kind of get an idea of how many kids might be trying out for the team, and I got 90 kids to sign up, which I was real pleased about.
Fred in North Baton Rouge. Hi, Fred. You're on the air with Bill Martin.
Hey, Bill. How are you all?
Doing well. Hey, thank you.
Good show, Jim. I just wanted to say I'm a former McKinley High basketball player. I used to play for McKinley, and I left McKinley in 67. And I know when I left, they had some of the best baseball teams around. And I've seen that field back there. I've been back there since that time, and I've seen that field. But I was going to tell Bill to call on some of these players who's played in the past, and or any players who played for McKinley, to help out with that fundraiser. I'll be willing to help with that if you need me there. But that's just something to be able to do to help McKinley or give back to McKinley after all the years of being back there. So it'd be a nice thing to do if he needs to get in touch with me to do that. I'd be glad to give him my number.
All right. Why don't you give your number off the air, Fred? And obviously some people are trying to help.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's, in a volunteer situation, it's tough to kind of get to reach out to all the individuals, to all the different facets of the community that might be able to help us. We're certainly trying. And Fred, thank you very much. It's a generous offer. Anyone who might be listening, anyone you might be able to get in touch with that could possibly also offer up help is most welcome.
Well, thank you, Bill, and good luck. Let's keep in touch. I would like an update on this sometime soon.
Yes, sir.
Bill Martin. Paul Conroy is with us, a former British soldier. as a photographer and filmmaker. His work spans a couple of decades. He's reported on conflicts in Iraq, Congo, Kosovo, Libya, and Syria. That's the focus of his latest work, Under the Wire, Marie Colvin's Final Assignment. Good morning, Paul Conroy.
Hey. Good morning. Thanks for having
us. And Paul's joining us from where?
I'm in London at the moment.
Okay. You're in London. What time is it in London?
It's just coming on to 4 o'clock. It's wet and it's rainy.
Well,
and typically English.
Typical. Well, your book is captivating, but at times heartbreaking. It's about a remarkable woman, Marie Colvin. Tell us about her life and the end of her life in February of last year.
Well, I mean, I think most people who with an interest in journalism know of Marie Colvin in one way or another. She was one of the most tenacious and fearless journalists I ever worked with, and that's a long period. The last assignment, we just spent a year in Libya together for the whole of the Libyan conflict, and we had a few weeks off, and we got a call from the Sunday Times saying, you know, Paul, are you Marie? Ready to go to Syria? And it was an instant yes. You know, there was no way that we knew something big was about to happen, and that was the go ahead really to get out to Syria. We couldn't go in the usual methods. We couldn't get visas. We'd both been in and out of Syria before, and we knew we'd be refused. And also, you know, if you go in on a visa, you end up with the government minders, the guards, etc. So we decided to go cross illegally from Lebanon into Syria via a mountain pass with smugglers and Free Syrian Army soldiers. That was our route into Syria. And, you know, that in itself was a challenge, shall we say.
Well, Marie was killed in a rocket attack in February of last year, and that's the major focus of the book, Under the Wire, Marie Colvin's Final Assignment. Certainly she risks her life to report what was going on in Syria. But she had experience with this sort of thing. She was wounded many years ago, wasn't she?
That's right. She was wounded. She was helping civilians in Sri Lanka when she was fired on by the army with an RPG grenade, which exploded in front of her, blinded her in one eye, and, you know, a lot of shrapnel in her head and her chest and body. But, you know, she came back. She came back to, you know, to the top of her game, really, after that. And really, you know, what happened in Homs was, it's because when Marie got a story and was immersed in the story, she wouldn't let it go. And we were in Homs, and there were 28,000 women and children trapped in that ruins when they went, the Assad army were shelling literally the life out of the place. They were massacring civilians. And there's not a way. You know, that's what Marie was known for. She found a story and stuck with it, and she was never going to turn back while there were 20-odd thousand women and children undergoing that sustained attack. And, you know, that's why we stayed, because it was she would not walk away from a story. That's the level of she worked at. It was so close to it. It became her story and her mission to make a difference, to get that story out and, you know, really try and do something.
Well, she got into Syria on a motorcycle, didn't she?
Yeah, we used various methods crossing. You know, sometimes it was tiptoes through the night through minefields. Other times it was on motorbikes, trucks. You know, we were just passed on this chain of people who, you know, who got us to where we wanted to be in the end. But like you say, with Libya we'd go in, and we went into rebel held territory. With Syria, there was no rebel held territory. When we crossed that border, we were in enemy territory, really. And it was like that all of the time we were there. There was no breathing space where you could pull back and relax. It was full on. You know, they were looking for us. We were trying to avoid them. And it was relentless, a relentless job, trying to just stay one foot ahead of the security services and the army.
Well, as the final barrage of artillery fire came, Marie was killed instantly. Dozens of civilians also killed. Paul, the man we're speaking of, Paul Conroy, another heroic journalist, you were badly injured.
That's right. We were in, it was called the media center. In essence, it was just a room in someone's house. We'd woken up about 6:30, 7 o'clock when the shelling started. It started every day at the same time. We came into the main room. We'd been sleeping in the small side room. And as we entered the main room, about 2 minutes later, I heard shells land on either side of the building. And then maybe a minute passed and there were shells were even closer. They were rockets, actually, coming in. Another 30 seconds, and the first rocket smashed into the room we'd just been sleeping in and removed it. The second rocket hit the wall and blew out the side of the house. Then a third rocket came in from above, took out the remaining floors above us. And at that point, there was absolute chaos. It was blackness. I thought the attack was over, so I reached for the camera to get a shot of the destruction. And as I bent down, there was an almighty explosion. It was a direct hit. I was about three meters from where the impact was. I wasn't knocked unconscious, but all I felt was a brick or something had bounced off my leg. And as I put my hand down to check what had happened, my arm just slipped straight through my leg in one side, out the other side, and, I realized just I had to grab the artery to check it was still pumping and there was still an artery. Once I confirmed there was, I put a scarf around my leg and put on a tourniquet and went looking at me first, thought it was, where's Marie? So I went maybe 2-3 yards, fell over, and found her body in the rubble just at the entrance of the house, and checked, but it was instant, but there was Marie-Anne Remy Oschlich, the French photographer, too.
Well, Marie Colvin was a heroic journalist. As mentioned, the last 11 years of her life, she was reporting with one eye. And when she lost her eye, she was 44 and wrote a 3,000-word article on time to meet the deadline as she was wounded.
That's Marie.
Uh-huh. And how the heck did you get out of there?
Well, it was I was actually, because of the place was surrounded by a full division of the Syrian military, I was trapped for 5 days along with some other journalists, and we were kept in an old house that was made of black basalt and not concrete, so they said it would be a little bit stronger. And they just, for 5 days, we just had to sit, and from dawn to, from 6:30 to midnight, they'd continually shell the whole area. Eventually they came in one day and just about 8 in the evening, 9 o'clock in the evening, picked us all up and said, we're leaving now. And they gave me some trousers to put on and a pair of shoes. Mine were blown off. And they just drove us through the most ferocious attack on a convoy, on one of the most ferocious attacks I've ever seen. They were just threw everything at this convoy that was evacuating the injured. And then they took us to a tunnel, a 3-kilometer underground tunnel. It was a storm drain that they discovered they could get people and food and supplies in and out. But that was, you had to bend double to get in it. And they put me on a motorbike that they'd specially cut down that would drive through this storm drain.
Wow.
And they evacuated. Essentially, most of the escape was done from Baba Amra in Homs on the back of a motorbike underground while they were attacking over the ground. So it was quite a nail-biting journey out.
Well, the book is Under the Wire, Marie Colvin's final assignment, a seat-of-your-pants kind of experience that is written about in graphic detail by the survivor, Paul Conroy. When Marie and Paul were smuggled into Syria last year by rebel forces, they were trapped in one of the most hellish neighborhoods on earth. Marie was tragically killed by a rocket February 22nd a year ago that also blew a hole in Paul's thigh big enough for him to put his hand through. Bleeding profusely, short of food and water, and excruciating pain, he endured 5 days of intense bombardment before being evacuated in a daring escape involving a motorbike ride through a tunnel, crawling through enemy terrain, and finally climbing a 10-foot wall. It's all detailed in Under the Wire. Thank you for sharing your story today from London, Paul Conroy.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you,
sir.
And Marie is justifiably described by her peers as the greatest war correspondent of her generation. Today is the 43rd anniversary of Tom Dempsey's kick to beat the Lions. November 8th, 1970. JC, can we give the listen from Al Wester, who was calling the games for the Saints in those days?
Scarpetti will hold at the Saints 38-yard line, and Dempsey will try the longest kick he's ever attempted. 2 seconds left. Here's the snap. The ball is down. Dempsey kicks. It's on the way. It is.
New Orleans 19, Detroit 17 on this date at Old Tulane Stadium, November 8th, 1970. Al Wester at the microphone. We'll be back Monday. Until then, have a great weekend and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.